Welcome, everyone, to another episode of All Things Trek. This is a recorded show, you might notice, as we are not responding to anything you are saying in the chat. And that is because we have four guests who I am very proud to present. And because of time stuff, we ended up doing a pre-recorded show. So without further ado, I would like to introduce Jen and Angela from the Anomaly Podcast.
Hello.
Hello.
And then I would also like to introduce Sue and Sarah from the Anomaly Podcast Supplemental.
Hello.
And you can find all of them over at, I believe it is, anomalypodcast.com.
That's correct.
And, of course, you can go through iTunes and all the various places that you find podcasts these days. So, first, I would like to hear in your ladies' words, what is your podcast all about?
Angela, would you like to? Okay, you want me to say it? We are a geek girl podcast. We cover everything science fiction, fantasy. We even talk about science and space and the space program. We do interviews. We cover conventions. We do commentary on television shows and discussions about various books. We just did one on The Hunger Games recently and compared it to the film.
I like that.
Yeah, we do a lot of different things, and we, of course, are Star Trek fans, first and foremost.
Yeah, we came to that conclusion. We actually had a podcast about that, where we compared and contrasted Star Trek and Star Wars, and we pretty much concluded that both of us were basically Star Trek fans.
But we love Star Wars, too.
We love both. No, we love both, but we kind of came down on the side of Star Trek. Slightly.
Well, I mean, you know, as is proper. It's all right. It's all right to like Star Wars too, as long as you acknowledge the correct one.
We like everything, but that just happens to be where we figured out. I think we didn't know until we recorded that podcast that was the case.
Yeah.
And Sue and Sarah, what do you guys do on the Anomaly Supplemental?
Take it away, Sue.
Well, Anomaly Supplemental came along when. You know, actually, Casey, who isn't here, and I thought that, well, there was some stuff going on and shows weren't getting out as regularly, and we sort of volunteered to do a guest podcast, which became a second show. And I'm not entirely positive how that happened, but it did. So now we are also monthly and kind of, I guess, 2 weeks after Anomaly comes out, Anomaly Supplemental comes out. And it is Anomaly Supplemental, sort of like Captain's Log Supplemental. So occasionally we do or topics that relate to what the main show on Anomaly was, like when Jen and Angela covered Measure of a Man, Casey and I did a character analysis of Data.
Which was one of my favorite episodes, and I'm not at all biased, but I did really like the Data character analysis.
Thank you so much. We're really, really proud of that episode, actually.
And I thought it was one of the coolest things that came out of the Measure of a Man discussion was someone, I think, like left a one of their voice commentary was they were talking about how it didn't make sense that Starfleet was claiming ownership of Data because they didn't build him. But I thought it was interesting because I was like, assuming if we got to the point where we declared Data as property, wouldn't Starfleet own him via salvage rights?
Right. It's true, though.
Yes, but that was Sarah's husband who made that comment, and he knows just about everything. He claims that there was no salvage rights made or claim on him made. So,
and I think sometimes when storytelling that you're doing, that it's not those particular things that are really that important, and it's the essence of the thing that's important. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of where I come down on some of those arguments, because we can go back and forth about all kinds of things when we do it that way. But sometimes it's the essence of the story and the thing it's trying to convey. And I think Measure of Man did it very well. And so that's my answer.
I mean, when I'm listening to Riker argue his point, I can sort of just think in my head, no, that's wrong, that's all wrong. And every once in a while, I get a little frustrated, but then I think about it, I'm like, all right, one of the reasons I know that's wrong is because I've seen this episode.
Right.
So, you know, and then there's also the fact that just a lot of times when you're in the middle of some kind of big historic, like, social change, looking back on it, it seems really obvious. But at the time, it's, you know, you reach this monumental conclusion, and you're like, oh, okay, now that makes sense.
And it's such a powerful episode. It really is. And speaks to, without getting into specific political stuff, speaks to a lot of things that are going on in our society today. So even, what, 25 years later, holy crap, it is an important episode of television.
This is extremely correct. and I also, did you guys hear about how apparently the Blu-ray version of it is going to have 22 extra minutes?
Whoa.
Of each episode?
No, just of A Measure of a Man. Apparently, there's like 22 minutes of footage that was cut from the final episode.
That'll be exciting.
I'm going to need to buy a Blu-ray player.
See, I've barely gotten all my DVDs.
Yeah, that was the only thing that really made me interested in the Blu-ray edition.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that looks kind of nice, but I'm not going to buy a Blu-ray player just to watch that. But now it's like, I'm kind of curious. I'm like,
I'd be interested to know what the 22 minutes consist of, because usually the things that are cut needed to be cut, you know? Right. And when they're added back, you're like, wow, that was really crappy. It really needed to be gone.
22 minutes discussing how Data sewed his own uniform.
Right, or maybe Picard and Lavoie went on a date or something. And
Oh, God, I hope that's not what it is. But I could see it being that. Now I'm afraid. All right. So my first official question of this interview is, I would like to know how each of you got into Star Trek, and I'm just going to go in order of how you're appearing on my Skype call. So, Jen, you first.
Okay. Well, I grew up in the sticks of South Texas, and my dad is basically John Wayne's twin brother, but loves Star Trek. And that's how I was introduced, is through my dad. We started watching the original series. I would stay up late, and we would watch that together, and reruns. I'm not that old, but and then he introduced me to all the other things like Planet of the Apes and Star Wars and things like that. He used to call me his little space cadet. So, yeah, that's how I got started.
Well, that's adorable. Sue?
Okay. Well, I was introduced to science fiction in general and Star Trek specifically by my older brother, who is 13 years older than me. So I was very young when The Next Generation started, but I remember watching the episodes pretty consistently with my older brother. I even remember when Best of Both Worlds Part 2 premiered to open, the fourth season? We had my brother invited his friends over, and there was a banner in our living room that said, "Go Boar." Yeah, I, for some reason, thought that my older brother was very cool. Like, it was awesome to love Star Trek and be on the chess team and things. So,
awesome.
Not even kidding you. So that's kind of what I grew up. But I really became a big Star Trek fan of my own in terms of not missing an episode. Probably around fifth grade for me, which was towards the end of The Next Generation.
Mm-hmm. Angela?
Well, my story is kind of similar to Jen's. My father was a fan of Star Trek, and it was in the original series, and it was in reruns. And then on top of that, the very first movie I remember seeing in the movie theater was Wrath of Khan. I got to go to the movie theater with my parents and saw Wrath of Khan. And then I just remember Star Trek always being around. And I remember knowing that Next Generation was coming out. And I watched Encounter at Farpoint live that Saturday night. And I pretty much never missed an episode from the time I was in seventh grade on. And that was I was just kind of hooked on it and didn't really think of it as anything weird. I was just a Star Trek person pretty much from the beginning. I didn't know a world without it. So that's pretty much my story.
Sarah?
Well, ironically enough, my story is similar to Sue's. It was my older brother. He had the most gigantic crush on Dr. Crusher. And basically, like, that's why he started watching Next Generation. So I grew up with the movies and, you know, Next Generation, the show, watching that from a really young age. And I remember he actually would make, like, custom labels for all the VHS tapes. And he would He would record Dr. Crusher's episodes on their own tapes. Tapes of Dr. Crusher episodes. So basically, that's how I got into it, just because my big brother was so into it. So, yeah, just grew up watching all the original Star Trek movies. Only some of the original series episodes, he had a couple that we would watch, but it was more like The Next Generation, the show, and original series movies that I grew up on.
All right. Well, then I will open up the next question to anyone who feels like picking it up first. Which Star Trek show is your favorite?
Of the series?
Yeah, which series?
Oh, Next Generation for me, hands down. Yes.
I think you just spoke for all of us, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A very lonely Deep Space Nine fan in this room. Oh.
No, I'm a Deep Space Nine fan too. For me, it's nostalgia because I grew up watching TNG. It started when I was in junior high. For me. So my adolescence, basically, I was watching Star Trek The Next Generation. So college came along and I was watching Deep Space Nine. And anyway, we can get into that later.
I have an order. I mean, I can tell you my order pretty quickly. I don't know if anybody else has an order, but mine is definitely TNG and TOS, Enterprise, Voyager, and Deep Space Nine at the bottom. Sorry.
Make me sad.
And I know. Sorry.
Somewhere the world's smallest violin is playing just for me.
I know, but I'm a sucker for Scott Bakula.
My problem with DS9 became that I started, I was at the age where I got busy in the evenings around the time that DS9 started going to those arcing stories. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to set my VHS recorder. I was about to say DVD. And DVRs exist at that point. So, you miss an episode and you're lost.
Right.
And so I was bitter towards DS9 for a long time until a couple years ago I rewatched the whole series. And I have a new appreciation for it. But like Jen said, it's about the nostalgia, I think, for TNG.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also when you talk about DS9 for me being like at the bottom of the list, that's still still Stake. I mean, it's still good, awesome, amazing television that I would definitely sit and watch. It's just that I happen to love TNG the most. So I appreciate and love it all, though.
So do you think, nowadays it would be easier to get into a show with that kind of arcing story just because it's so much easier to see an episode that you missed?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I also think we're more used to it as people who watch TV. I mean, that was new when DS9 did it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, because TNG was more episodic. It was just more creature of the week, story of the week, and then it would have maybe a couple of two-part episodes or maybe something that'll come up again. But, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Just television in general has moved in that direction. So we're more used to seeing that now, that you don't miss an episode. I mean, one of the most popular television series probably ever was Lost. And that is the extreme of that kind of storytelling. Yeah.
I think Lost demonstrated the dangers of that kind of storytelling.
Yeah.
Well, that too.
Because it was like, look, guys, look at all these arcs we have. We promise we'll all meet and form seamlessly together into a perfect whole. And
then the
perfect plot hole, I think, would be how I would describe the ending of Lost.
I didn't watch it.
Me either.
And then the dialogue was kind of formulaic. They would they'd get into a conflict over some weird thing that didn't look like it really mattered. Then they would shout at each other. Then they would point guns. And then they would reveal the thing, and it didn't matter.
Yeah, I started getting bored with it because I was one of, at the beginning of the show, I was really into it and I was looking for all those hidden symbols and trying to figure out what is going on because they talked about it like there was something deeper, and they knew what they were doing and they knew where they were going with it. And then it just kind of started falling apart and nothing really seemed to be cohesive or make sense. And it lost me at that point. So
how did you guys feel about the, it's like not really a relaunch, but the shift in the tone of TNG that kind of started in season 3 with the introduction of Michael Piller?
I'm not sure that I noticed it.
Fair enough, I guess.
Be more specific about your question.
All right. Well, so you see season 1, right? And it's got an almost TOS theme to it. It's very brightly colored and very extremely, preaching the Starfleet gospel. And season 2 is a little bit more of that. And then it feels like in season 3 it started to get more political and a little not political as in as in talking about like the politics that were going on at the time, but like it started to have more intrigue to it.
I turned for the better. I think the first two seasons, I feel like there was enough there that you like get into it, but then I feel like from season three onward is where it really started to get like show.
Yeah, it really got more momentum starting in season three. I agree with that completely. And I think too that you know it's hard, and I don't know about the other ladies, but because I'm such a big Star Trek fan, I have not only watched TNG over and over and over again, I've watched all of the documentaries about it and people talking about it and all the directors and the writers and what they've said about it. And so I feel like I'm almost too aware of what their intentions were when it started getting darker, and especially after Gene Roddenberry passed, and then we got even darker, and then we got even DS9 and your Voyager where it's like, I mean, you had kind of this happy utopia. And I remember seeing in a recent documentary about Gene Roddenberry is that when he created TNG, he did not want the characters to have any conflict against each other. And if you watch it, you'll see that is something that kept going, and the writers had a really hard time with that, because how do you make television where the seven main characters don't fight ever, you know, because TOS was pretty much all about that, the three main characters all fighting all the time. And so so they had to introduce these bigger and badder things, and how the technology rebels against you, and the holodeck would always mess up, and So they had to be more creative in their storytelling because of that direction by Gene Roddenberry. So anyway, I don't know if I answered your question, but probably not.
Oh, that was great. Since you brought up holodecks, that's actually something I was thinking about asking a little bit later, but now we're on it here. How do you guys feel about the holodeck? Like, do you have a favorite holodeck episode?
The Big Goodbye.
Oh, that's a good one.
Big Goodbye is the one where Data is a cowboy, right?
No, that's just the Big Goodbye.
Is the first
is
holodeck
the best
episode,
first
right?
season episode ever.
Yes.
It's the first Dixon Hill episode. It's the first time in the holodeck.
Right.
Data says he's talking about the Yankees, and he says Joe DiMaggio. I mean, it's everything about it is perfect.
Yeah, the one you're referring to is Fistful of Data's, and that's my favorite holodeck episode.
And mine is the one I can't think of the name of, but it's where the ship starts manifesting as the holodeck.
That's like a season 7. Is that the one with the Orient Express?
It's a season 7. Huh?
It's the one with the Orient Express, isn't it?
Yes, the one with the Orient Express.
Oh.
I really, it's kind of a funky episode, but I really like it because I like that idea that the ship, I don't know, that the ship had consciousness of some sort. I don't know.
I really liked the way they reacted to it, the way the characters played it. I was a little iffy on the idea of establishing that the Enterprise computer could manifest a sentient life form. But, you know, I wasn't sure if that was a precedent they wanted to set, but I did like the way they handled that story.
Yeah, I agree. I liked it.
I also liked Ship in the Bottle, which Angela and I have covered in the past, and for different reasons, Angela dislikes the episode.
Oh, do tell. So. We need drama.
I'm trying to remember what it was, because I didn't have an expectation when we watched it and covered it that I was going to dislike it. I don't remember disliking it when I first saw it, but then I think that there were things that were picky to me about, and it was not about, I don't mind holodeck going wrong things, but I felt like Data and Geordi, or not, who was it that got stuck? It was Data and Picard, and who were stuck actually on the holodeck, and then there was like the holodeck within the holodeck, I felt like the way their characters were, that they would have figured it out sooner.
I was not clear how the holodeck fools you into, like, if you walk in completely separate, like in opposite directions. I was never clear on how the holodeck stops you from running into a wall.
Well, I think that whatever happens between you, the computer creates a distance.
Mm-hmm.
It creates like the illusion of distance.
Like a forced perspective.
It creates forced perspective.
Maybe each of those little panels can turn into a treadmill.
There you go. Well, no, I have a feeling that that's kind of what it does. I mean, of course, I'm not a holodeck engineer, so I don't know for sure. But I don't know. I think, and again, it's been a long time since I've seen the episode or why I was weirded out. Not weirded out by it, but I just felt like they would have figured it out a lot sooner. Although I do like the premise, and I think I remember liking the first episode. The first Moriarty episode was interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
When he's first introduced, it's the second one is the ship in the bottle one. When that's the one that we covered that I was a little more iffy on. So
yeah, I wondered why they confined him to that little tiny little bottle, if you will, and shelved him instead of trying to figure out how to get him out. Because as, you know, the series developed, or, you know, several other series, and Voyager, as you know, they had the holographic doctor who has the EMH, you know, unit type thing going on there. So maybe this was kind of the idea that sparked the EMH, you know, the ability for him to become a real person in a certain way of speaking, not really real, but... so anyway, our debate at that time.
I just remember now. Go ahead.
You wanted to delete him.
Yes, that's what I said. I remember what was. I was like, there's a
difference.
Because
he was a murderer.
Yes, and regardless of what kind of whatever he is, he's written as a murderer. So why would you want a murderer and a thief and a philanderer who's written as such? There's a difference between setting a doctor who happens to sing opera on the world. And setting a, you know, murderer and conniving schemer on the world, a psychopath, basically.
I remember the argument now.
Okay, yeah that's what it was. I was like, I don't know why we're talking about this. Kill
Did
him.
Did he actually kill anybody in Ship in a Bottle?
No one got killed.
The whole argument was that he was only written as a murderer. He wasn't an actual murderer.
Right, because he's a Sherlock Holmes character.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, we haven't heard from you on this subject.
Sorry.
What's your favorite holodeck episode?
Actually, I was going to say Ship in a Bottle. That's one of my favorites. If only just because I think Daniel Davis is the quintessential Moriarty. I think he's amazing. It's like, I feel like he makes... Elementary Dear Data was the first episode, and Ship in a Bottle was the second one, I believe.
Yes.
And he makes both those episodes just awesome, and totally makes you not mind the fact that last... in them. I'm sorry, I'm not a Pulaski fan.
Me either.
I always feel sorry for Pulaski because I feel like she could have been cool, but the writers didn't really give her any material to work with except for hating Data. It was like her character trait. And we never found out why she hated Data so much.
No, she didn't hate him, she just didn't regard him.
It felt more like animosity when I was watching those scenes. It's like, it didn't feel like it was just a, you know, it's sort of like how I think my desk is a thing. But I don't hate my desk. I don't routinely go around and tell my desk it's not a person and, like, make fun of it.
But if everybody else in your family treated your desk like a person, you might think that was weird.
Well, hang on. I'm going to call my family and get them over.
I think the main thing with Pulaski was that, as they've said before, they were basically trying to do a female Bones. And what they were trying to have an issue with Data, just like Bones has an issue with Spock. But it just didn't. And it's like, because... you were introduced to both of them at the same time. It's kind of like Pulaski. It's like, as my husband always says, you introduce a new character and then have that new character immediately start dissing everyone's favorite character. It's not really the best way to get people to like that.
Her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially since Data never retaliated, whereas Spock was always ready with a comeback quip.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Apparently she also had an affair with Riker's father.
Which was my favorite Pulaski moment in the entire show was when, like, Riker was trying to figure out how to relate to his dad, and she came over and gave him some insight. And I was like, okay, could we see more of that? Could we have her maybe do that a few more times?
I think my initial reaction to that was, ew.
Well, there's that, too.
Well, you were also, like, 12 when you saw that.
True.
The bottom line for me with Pulaski is that she's not Beverly.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
That's really what it comes down to.
And she was just holding a spot. She was just a warm body, bless her heart.
Yeah, and that's when I watch the show, I have a really hard time believing that they didn't know Crusher was coming back. Because they say they didn't. They say that wasn't planned. But then, like, I'm just watching, and I'm like, you know, if they didn't think she was just a placeholder, you'd think they would have given her a little bit more.
Yeah.
She has like the one episode where she gets really old, and that's like pretty much her only moment in the spotlight, really.
Well, apparently, I've read, I don't know how true it is because, you know, internet, but I've read that Gace McFadden left because the role was pitched to her that she was going to be Picard's main love interest, which, you know, would have been fine with me because I'll straight up admit that I am a Picard crusher shipper. And that does, you know, maybe tint my view of the series a little bit.
A little bit.
Maybe. But apparently even Patrick Stewart called her to say, you need to come back because this isn't working. So if the producer and writer had thought of this character as constantly having this tension or chemistry with the captain, and then they bring in Bones, basically, a female Bones, that's not going to be there. So whatever they had planned for that character in season two, if anything, went down the drain immediately.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they knew she was coming back, but I think they are very fortunate that she did. Because I'm not even sure, honestly, that the show would have continued for as long as it did if Pulaski stayed in the crew, because it would have taken a completely different route.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Because then you also had the kind of like girlfriend stuff going on between Troy and Crusher, because they were the same, you know, they could relate to each other. And also then the Wesley, the mother son relationship with Wesley. I mean, there's just so many, it's like, it's almost like talking about like the episode of Tapestry, you know, you just pull on one, you know, pull on one of those threads and everything kind of falls apart. And do you like how I brought it full circle back to thanks. And so the show itself, you know, you pulled on that Crusher thread and the whole thing kind of started falling apart, and I'm glad it got back together. Very happy about that.
The reason I always heard that she left was because Maurice, the chief writer for the first two seasons, didn't like her. That was how it was explained to me. But again, you know, the internet,
right?
Who knows what the real explanation is?
It could have been both.
Yep.
Speaking of characters that only made it one season, How do you guys feel about Tasha Yar?
I really liked Tasha. When I, again, as a junior high kid, I thought that she was awesome. Here's a woman who was the chief of security. And to me, I thought that was really something to look up to, I guess. It, you know, as an adolescent, you know, that a woman in a position of power. For the TOS fans, it was Uhura, and it kind of just graduated to Tasha. Mm-hmm. But I didn't like that she was killed off, and I didn't understand at the time what that was all about. But I think it added a lot of opportunities for character development later on, you know, where people referred back to her, and then she returned, the actress returned to play her daughter, you know, later on. Mm-hmm. So it
and
also
then, yeah,
provided opportunities for other stories. So I think it was a perfect opportunity, you know, by killing off a character, because nothing bad ever happened to any of the characters. It needed to have some danger. You know, you needed to be afraid for them and think, good gosh, they could kill somebody off. They did it to Tasha Yar, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think that was necessary.
Yeah, I remember when I was watching it, and when they first killed off Tasha Yar, I was kind of ambivalent about it. And then I watched yesterday's Enterprise, and I was like, this is the character we could have had if she was written properly? Can we bring her back, please? Can there be like a time warp where yesterday's Enterprise Tasha Yar ends up on the regular show? It's TNG. You guys can do anything.
That's true.
Well, we're talking about a character death. We'll shift seasons over for a minute here. Or not seasons, excuse me, shows. How you guys feel about the death of Jadzia Dax?
That one was more emotional, I think.
Yeah.
That made me mad. I was really upset. I, like, basically was almost the point where I like, wanted to stop watching the show, basically, because she's one of my favorite characters, and yeah. And then I was really disappointed with Ezri. I didn't like her at all, so.
Yeah.
I liked Ezri, but I didn't like her as a Dax.
Yeah.
If they had just brought on that character and she was not related at all to the Dax slug symbiote, whatever.
Yeah.
Fine. But that she was so clearly not only the replacement in the cast, but the replacement host, that just didn't work for me.
It seemed kind of weird that her big character motivation is that she was having a hard time, like, keeping her host's lives separate, so she decided to go live in a place that was full of Jadzia's memories and everyone who remembered Jadzia.
And her husband?
Oh, yeah, and her husband. Mm. So do you guys... go ahead.
I was just going to say, I had stopped watching the series before the death of Jadzia, and so... I watched the episodes with Ezri only through Netflix, so I don't have as big a problem with her. And I think it's because I see the conflicts that they introduced with her trying to adjust to having to live up to who Jadzia was, or feeling like she had to do that. So story-wise, I think they were trying to add some tension with her, you know, having someone completely opposite of who Jadzia was, you know, this mousy, young, naive person who has the Dax, and how, you know, the Dax symbiont, and how is she going to handle, you know, all or the fact that she has to fill the shoes of Jadzia. Anyway, I thought it was provided a lot of opportunity for story, so it didn't bother me at all.
I think, I'm pretty sure, I haven't asked this yet, what is your guys' favorite episode? Now that we know you all love TNG, what is your favorite episode within the show?
I'll go last.
Sarah, you go first this time.
Well, see, I have to, like, really quick type it into, like, IMDb to make sure I have the name right and pretend I actually knew it, you know.
I'm terrible with names.
I know. I cannot remember episode
titles. I'm pretty good at episode names, so I'll help you out.
One is, Remember Me. I just love that episode.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to have to remind me what happens in that episode.
Crusher gets, like, hot.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's, like, peering. And so she's trying to figure out what's going on. And it's, like, the reappearance of the Traveler. Which, mm-hmm. You know, he's a really awesome character, so that was a plus.
Yeah, that's the one where she's inside the warp bubble, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So that was definitely one of my favorite episodes. I just felt like... Mm-hmm. Every time I watch it, I remember, like, watching it for the first time and being like, what the heck is going on? So it's, like, it's, like, nostalgic, but I also feel like it's one of, like, the more awesome storylines and, you know, definitely an immersive storyline. So that's why I like it.
I can agree with that. Sue, you have a favorite episode?
This is really hard. Mm-hmm. The thing is, I love so many of them, and I will watch pretty much any of them if they're on television. But if I had to pick one, it would probably be The Inner Light.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good one. Or Tapestry. But yes, one of...
Another good one.
The I think the appealing thing to me is that idea of sort of going into your own head and living another life, mm-hmm. which is what both of those episodes deal with. So, I don't know, that's where I go.
One of them is John Delancey.
Yes.
Jen?
I have a whole bunch of favorites, but if I had to pick one, it would have to be a two-parter.
That's fair.
And I'd have to say Unification, ooh. Part one and two. So I've always been a fan of Vulcans, and the whole idea that Vulcans and Romulans were once one and the same was really intriguing to me. And then seeing Spock as an ambassador trying to bring them together again was I just loved having him back on the show. And then there were a lot of funny moments. Even though this episode was really dark, there were some funny moments that just crack me up every time I watch them. Like when Data and Picard are sharing a cabin on that Klingon vessel on their way to Romulus. And Data is mm-hmm. staring at Picard while Picard's trying to sleep. That's one of my favorite moments ever.
Like, come on, Picard. You don't find the soothing gaze of Brent Spiner while you sleep?
That is a good one. My favorite one is pretty much hands down Time Zero Part 1 and 2 because it incorporates, like, all the things I absolutely love about Star Trek and everything all together into in one two-part episode. And I just love it because it's a data episode. It's a time travel episode. There's period costumes. They have Shakespeare. I mean, there's just, I mean, it's, for me, it's a perfect episode, and it's just, and it's kind of funny. It has those funny moments, and you got Mark Twain, and I mean, it's, to me, it's the perfect episode of Star Trek.
I mean, Mark Twain holds the Enterprise crew hostage with, you know, a Colt 45.
A Colt 45.
I don't know what else you could possibly ask for.
Yeah. I just, and I think it's a well acted episode too. It's, yeah, I just love it. Love it.
Speaking of Time Zero, I have a, this is a random trivia question for you guys. So you know the sequence where Data goes in and wins a whole bunch of money at poker?
Yes.
So we've seen Data play poker before, and he doesn't win all that often. He's not like the best player in the group. So he beats all these guys who are apparently professional card sharks. So do you think the implications are that, one, he's cheating, like he uses his super android sleight of hand, or that, two, in all those episodes where they're playing poker, he could have won anytime he wanted to, and he's letting his friends win because he doesn't want them to feel bad?
Don't they address that in another episode?
Not that I know of, do they?
I thought there was a scene at one of the senior staff poker games where they're talking about, you know, all of their quote-unquote special powers, I guess. Like, Data could easily count cards, and Deanna has her empathy, and Geordi could potentially see through them, if you will. And I thought he said something about not doing that, like purposely not counting the cards while they were playing poker. I'm going to have to look it up now, aren't I?
Well, also, I've always thought of it as that, because it's a season 5 to 6 episode, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so, so they've been doing this for a while. And I always kind of thought of, you know, especially Riker and Geordi and Troy, and even Crusher just being good poker players. And so he's kind of been under the tutelage of them, you know, showing him how to do it. So I think it's probably a combination. So not only has he been practicing, but he probably can count cards without people not knowing. So it's probably a combination of those things. That's what I always just thought. I never really thought too much about it. I just really love when he turns around and goes, poker? It's so classic to me. Love it.
No, it definitely works. It was just, as I was watching it, I was just like,
Yeah.
Back to all those sequences where Data doesn't understand what a bluff is. And I'm like, Especially since in Star Trek they don't play for real money. That was the thing I was always confused. I was like, why wouldn't you just always call Riker's bluff? Especially since you know he bluffs.
Well, because it's a pride thing, and it's still skill. You're still dealing with a skill set. And it's also something we can relate to. I mean, I doubt they'd still be playing poker, but you never know.
Playing some like weird future version of poker where where you have one card in the hole, and then you have up to 3 or 4 cards showing. What kind of poker is that? Like, I've tried to figure it out, and I don't think it's a real kind of poker. I think they just made it up.
Crazy made up poker. My gut tells me that this scene that exists in my brain happened with Pulaski.
Yeah, that's possible.
But that could just be because I feel like she hates Data. So I can't find it. So I could very well be making it up.
It's also possible that they said it over a course of episodes. Like in one episode they mentioned that Geordi, if he wanted to, could look through the cards. And then there was another episode where they mentioned that Troy could use her empathic senses. But they
weren't
together. It's possible.
Also, if Worf felt like he got a bad end of the deal, he might tear your arms off.
Oh, you know.
I'm such a terrible person at poker.
He got to win like once, didn't he? Like in, I think it was in the one with the Mobius loop. I think that was the one where he actually got to win.
He was winning when they were in, Frasier, the one with Frasier.
Yeah, that's the one.
I know which one you're talking about and I can't think of the name of it. Cause and Effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
keep repeating.
That is probably in my top 5 episodes, to be fair.
Yeah.
Awesome episode.
Mm-hmm.
So here's another TNG related question for you guys. So you remember at the end of season 3 with the Best of Both Worlds, and Riker like gives the command to fire. So and at that point they weren't positive if Patrick Stewart was going to renew his contract. Mm-hmm. Would you guys have kept watching the show if he hadn't and Riker had become the captain?
I'd have tried it.
Yeah.
I'd have kept watching.
I had a big crush on Riker, so that would have been okay with me.
Now it would also depend on if they kept Shelby.
Oh, I still wanted them to keep Shelby. I was sad we never saw her again.
Are you guys so real? I am. Obnoxious.
I didn't really like her. That's why I'm saying I don't, it would depend. And the thing is, though, but she was only in two episodes. So, I mean, and what if they did do something good with her? I don't know. And I was also young still, so I was not as judgmental as I am now. I probably would have kept watching.
Sarah, why don't you like Shelby?
Because she's, like, mean and all, like, you know, in your face, like, you know, I feel like she overcompensates, you know, like she, I feel like sometimes when they do strong female characters, they feel like they can't just be confident in their ability to do things. They also have to make them really confrontational and like, your face. It's like, if you're good at your, what you do, then you, that's all you need. You don't need to be all up on people and be like,
but
I can't do this and all that.
But at the same time, I'm sorry, but at the same time, most of the most of the female characters you get in Star Trek aren't like that. So it might be interesting to have a character like that because there are women who are like that.
And that's true.
Plenty of guys were like that too.
Then there are guys who are like that too. And just see how, like, you know, watching her get kicked around might be fun. Watching her learn her darn lesson.
Yeah. I think if we saw Shelby in, you know, not a war scenario, she probably would have been a little more chill. And I kind of think of her in my head like a young Admiral Nechayev.
Okay.
Because I think Nechayev is awesome.
Oh, yeah. Nechayev.
She's always up in the captain's faces and being snarky, but she's still kind of a hard ass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Well, on the same note, I don't hate Janeway. Everybody can,
I don't hate Janeway either.
I don't hate her either.
I don't at all. I like her, in fact.
I want to like Janeway. I try to like Janeway, but she's so inconsistent. I don't know which character she is each week I watch the show. It's like,
I don't know that they did. I think that's what's hard.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Kate Mulgrew. I don't think there's anything wrong with the way Janeway's acted. I just don't like how some episodes she'll bend over backwards to figure out a way around the Prime Directive for them to interfere. And then some episodes she's like, no, we can't break the Prime Directive even if it means, like, genociding or letting this entire planet die. And I'm like, which do you think is the right thing to do, Janeway? And they're like, these episodes are pretty close together. It's not like one was her at the start of the season and then one is her at the end. I don't know. I do really like Kate Mulgrew.
I think she gets a lot of flack, so I thought I'd throw that out there.
No, I mean, it's definitely true, and sometimes people transfer their dislike of Janeway unfairly onto Mulgrew, and I don't think that's fair at all.
Just like, I like Diana Moldar. I like her as an actress. I just don't like Flack. I don't think it's right to the actress.
Yeah, definitely. So, speaking of, there's nothing I can seamlessly segue this into, so I'm just going to do it. I want to talk about movies now.
Yay!
Okay.
All right. Do you guys have a favorite movie of the Star Trek movies?
Yes.
Yes. First Contact.
First Contact?
First Contact for me, too.
Oh, my goodness. We have any other First Contacts in the call?
Are we talking about just the TNG movies or the
movies? No, all.
No, all the movies.
All the movies.
Oh, that's harder.
I could probably put them in order too, but it would take me a lot longer. But First Contact.
I have a favorite that everybody always makes fun of me for.
What?
My favorite is Star Trek V.
I thought maybe you were going to say that.
Yeah.
In Search of Spock? Or No.
That's the one with the whale.
The whales. I like that
one
too.
Star Trek 5. Okay. Find God, and then let's shoot God.
Oh. Okay. Yes. Okay.
Sorry. Yeah. Okay. It's hard.
Make your case.
I know I'm looking at it through childhood colored glasses because that's the one we watched like every week. We'd watch it like every Friday because it was one of the only ones we owned or something. Mm-hmm. And also I am like a huge, beyond huge film score fan, and I think that's one of the absolute most gorgeous Jerry Goldsmith compositions there is. The mountain, in particular, the very opening, like with Kirk climbing the mountain, is like so. Like every time I listen to that, it's just like I could cry. So I know that's partly it, but plus I don't know. I like the kind of exotic feel of it, like the planet, and I like there's like little details I notice all, you know, different times, like how the horses have like horns, and like I just feel like there's a lot of really interesting touches to it, but I know a lot of it is probably because I grew up with it, because Andrew, my husband, is just like, that's really not your favorite, you're just like totally brainwashed or something, so
start calling it Star Trek.
I think it's very fair. That's a fair reason.
Thank you.
The prosecution may now make its opening argument. So, Jen and Angela, you guys have first contact. Why is first contact your favorite?
You go first, Angela.
Well, because it's the... Well, one of the reasons is because it's the first TNG, full TNG cast episode. But also because...
Wait, isn't Generations the first one?
No, because Kirk was in there. Too.
Oh, okay, so
it was a crossover.
Okay, yes.
You know, it was a crossover. This was just specifically just TNG cast.
Correct.
And I, for me, and the thing is that that's not the only reason I like them, because my second favorite is Wrath of Khan. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm not really a fan of the rest of the TNG ones, so that's not the only reason I like it. I do, again, like I've said before, I like time travel episodes. So, of course, it's a time travel episode. I really was interested. I like the whole idea about Zefram Cochrane and the idea of heroes and how heroes are just men, that kind of thing. I mean, that has nothing to do with Star Trek, really, but I think it's kind of an interesting part of the story. And I just liked seeing them kind of a little more out of their element. And I don't know. I just liked everything about it. And Jonathan Frakes directed it, and I saw it on IMAX. I don't know, like there's like 14 different reasons, and I've seen it. That's the one I've seen the most as well. So I don't know. It has a special place in my heart, and I can't really think of anything I don't like about it. And I'm not even really a big Borg person. I'm not a fan of the Borg as an enemy, to be honest. But I do like how this all turns. I am a little weirded out by the whole Data, Queen of the Borg.
I was just about to ask that.
Relationship, but I sort of just ignore it and enjoy the rest of the show. Jen?
See, I like the Borg as an enemy as long as they didn't become, you know, like they started becoming wimpy towards the end of TNG. And I think in this movie, they were scary again.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed being scared, you know, what was going to happen. And, you know, they'd gone back in time and to destroy us and take us down, at, you know, in the past. And it's a time travel episode, and I enjoy those. So there's that. And I'm with Angela. Not all the TNG movies are my favorite. I mean, this is the only one that I really like. So just there's a lot of really funny scenes, like when the EMH is tasked with distracting the Borg so Crusher could escape, and you know, she tells him to I can't remember exactly
just
what it was.
Distract them.
Tell him a joke or something. I don't remember
sing a song,
exactly what she said.
Dance.
Yeah. So anyway, and he starts talking about, you know, analgesic for their skin. You know, so there are just a lot of reasons why I like it. I also really like the character of Lily, and I like the way she challenges Picard.
Should have been Crusher.
Well, she's too close to him. Crusher is. So that scene with him, you know, throwing his little fit, you know, the line must be drawn here. And she, you know, kind of calls him out on, you know, about how...
Moby Dick.
He's doing the whole Moby Dick thing. And here's your ships. You broke your ships or whatever. Anyway, I'm not really... articulating myself very well this evening, but my child is screaming in the background. It's a little distracting.
Does it bother either of you, the part where that Picard like shoots the guy who's being assimilated because he's all like, can't save them, but even though they've saved two people from the Borg at that point, they have a 100% success ratio?
It doesn't bother me because, well, I mean, it bothers me a little, but I think that it was like a heat of battle kind of decision. And I think it's okay for him to do questionable things. I like my good guys with a little bit of angst.
Mm-hmm.
And I think especially when you have so much material, no one is perfect. And especially in the heat of battle and feeling like he was feeling about the Borg in general, all of them are the enemy. It doesn't matter. And in his brain, I think he thinks he was doing him a favor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how long would it be? You know, then even if they could save him, the whole battle would have to be over. Then they'd have to find him. Then they would have, you know.
Well,
so.
You can't forget also the whole point of this movie is that Picard is scarred from mm-hmm. his being a Borg himself. So even though they saved him, he's scarred by that experience. So
yep.
I think he killed him not because he was a Borg, but because even though he could be saved, you know, he's always going to have to live with that. You know, the
yep.
trauma of being Borg and being connected to the Hive and... And I can understand it completely.
Yep.
You know, so.
Okay. Sue, we never got your favorite movie.
I think I've landed on The Voyage Home, which occasionally gets laughed at. But
well, I mean, it is a funny movie.
Well,
it's the one where they have to go and save the whales.
Yes.
It's the when they have the bird of prey that when it hits warp 8.8, we see some serious fireworks.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I mean that movie is interesting because it's like I think it's got kind of a unusual and somewhat I think flimsy plot, but the way it's executed is very nice.
I agree with that.
I think like Sarah, I see it still through the eyes I had when I first watched it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of just the amusing stuff of, you know, Spock putting the headband on to cover his ears and the nuclear vessels and Scotty picking up the mouse to speak to the computer, and it, just little things like that that kind of make my heart happy, you know.
Great.
That's fair. So what did you guys think of the 2009 Abrams movie?
I thought it was well done.
Mm-hmm.
Jen, yes. Sarah?
Well, I was going to say Angela and I reviewed it when it first came out, and I think I remember us being a little more critical of it back then. But
I'm
it was
still
right
critical
after,
of it.
Yeah. But it was right after we had seen it for the first time, and me being a Vulcan fan, I don't care if it's an alternate universe. The destruction of Vulcan is very disturbing to me, so that really rubbed me the wrong way initially. But I love the movie now. Another thing that I was initially rubbed the wrong way about was Uhura, and
I'm still rubbed the wrong way about
it. It's still, I'm not sure I really like it. It's not because she has a relationship with Spock. It's the fact that in the 60s, the character of Uhura was a full member of the crew. She wasn't someone's love interest.
Right.
She was someone to inspire women.
She was an equal.
She was equal. And in this movie, she, like I said, became a love interest. And even though she has all these abilities and everything, you know, I think she's the one that identified the fact that they were in another universe.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a linguist and she's very smart. I still couldn't get past the fact that now all of a sudden she's this person that has a relationship with Spock and it's not, you know, the same.
To me, that doesn't even bother me as much as, and
yeah.
I'm not back and forth about it at all. I am totally for sure don't like her. And this is why. Exactly all the things you said, and it's not just the relationship, it's just that I didn't like the casting. I felt like I just didn't like her. I didn't like it.
That's the actress? You didn't like the actress?
I didn't like the casting or the actress, and I didn't like the way she was written. And I don't know, I felt like they were able to pinpoint everything else so well that you got a basic hot chick thrown into the cast of a regular action movie. It's
but
like
remember,
everything else they were able to do right. They were able to do it in a different way that was fun. Bones was good. Even the kind of funky take on Scotty was good. Everything was off but good. And her, to me, for me personally, the Uhura thing just missed the mark by like a bazillion light years.
Was it only because she was a hot chick? Because remember, that's classic Roddenberry. He only cast hot people. He was all about hot.
I don't have any problem with that. I just feel like I don't know.
He was trying to do something different. He was bringing in a minority in the 60s mm-hmm. who was smart and intelligent and also a woman to be a full-fledged member of the bridge crew. And, you know, people have made jokes that she's basically answering the phone, but she's doing so much more than that.
Well, I mean, the joke about her answering the phone is sort of implying that the position of comm officer is not an important job.
And, which is ridiculous.
If you understand more about how ships work, you understand that she is doing a very important job.
Yes. Right, and it did kind of seem like she just was a secondary thing, and they had to figure out a way to fit her into this new story somehow. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they can't make a movie today without there being some kind of love story, which is a pet peeve for me because that's ridiculous. But they threw her in, they say that she's intelligent, but they don't give her a lot of time to prove it.
Yeah.
And her only really big scenes is when she, like, jumps on Spock in the turbo lift.
The most appropriate times for makeouts.
Right.
Yeah, that was something that made me sad, was that it was like, you know, she has this romance interest with Spock, she doesn't really do anything else. Like, they make this big deal about how brilliant she is, and then, like, I think she figures out at some point that the communicate, like, they specifically put her in the chair because she can tell the difference between Vulcan and Romulan, mm-hmm. and then it never comes up. They never, mm-hmm. like, she never needs to do anything important.
I think
Sarah, go ahead.
Oh, I wanted to say, firstly, I was literally, and I'm not even, you know, I'm not even joking, was jumping up and down the parking lot after I saw this movie because I loved it so much. That said, I don't know that I necessarily connect it as much with Star Trek as I was hoping I would. I still feel like it feels kind of like a whole world away. I feel like with Uhura and, you know, all that, I feel like in some ways the scope of the story was too big to really concentrate on the characters as much as we would have liked. I feel like you really got a lot of Kirk's story and you got a lot of Spock's story. But really, when you think about it, everybody else kind of, you know, we didn't get to see what they could do either. And I feel like I'm hoping that in the second movie, they'll be able to remedy that and do a lot better and make it more about the characters. Because I really do think, you know, with Uhura, I totally agree with you guys about her not being, it was kind of like implied attributes with her, and you didn't get to see what she could do. But I do feel like that was kind of how it was with a lot of the other people, too. I mean, one person I think they did really well with was like Chekhov. I mean, you got to see his mad skills through the whole thing. But I really do think that once they get on to the second and they know the direction they're going, that I'm hoping they'll concentrate more on the actual characters and make them a little more vivid and not just Spock and Kirk, you know?
Yeah. I was a little weirded out with the way they decided to play Scotty. It was sort of like, well, I can kind of see this as the Scotty that has entered the public, you know, imagination, but it's not really like any version of Scotty I remember.
Yeah, I understand that, and it is a little jarring, but I think I do have a soft spot for Simon Pegg, so maybe that's where.
I do love Simon Pegg. he definitely did it very well. I was a little surprised that was the version of Scotty they decided to use.
Yeah. Well, Scotty had a lot of comedic scenes in the series and in several of the movies. So I didn't find it jarring at all. I mean, he was younger, obviously, than the Scotty from the TOS series, I think. But I thought he did a great job and I liked the character.
And we haven't talked about Sulu sword fighting. That's pretty,
that was awesome.
Yeah. That was an awesome part of the movie, I thought.
I would have liked it 100% if he had had a regular sword and not like a weird foldy sword. I wasn't entirely clear what the point of that was.
Well, because how do you know, it's hard to have a scabbard, you know, that would be kind of hard to...
Yeah, you could have had it, like, attached to the side of that giant backpack thing he was wearing.
That's true.
I mean, you know, it's
still cool, though.
It's not that. the sword fighting was pretty good. Jen, as a Vulcan fan, how did you feel about the way Vulcans were portrayed in this movie? The fact that their planet was destroyed, you know, beside the point.
I liked their characterization. I thought was fine. The one thing that did irritate me was the training that Spock went through. And I know that he had a hard time in his childhood being accepted because he was never quite Vulcan, never quite human. Mm-hmm. But the thought of Vulcan bullies, you know, kids who are supposed to be like somewhat controlled in their emotions, picking on that on him, kind of was off-putting. But other than that, I didn't have any problem at all with the their characterization. Like I said, the only thing that really bothered me was the fact that their planet was destroyed and Spock was like the last of his kind. So, yeah. Really? But
those are the ones who are on vacation to Risa. They're probably okay. Do we have any? What do you guys? What are your hopes for the 2013 movie?
Pretty much what we've said. I think more character development, and just hoping they don't take it too far off the rails.
Oh, another thing, a much better villain because I.
Thank you.
Exactly. Thank you. Yes.
Yes.
That's now you should have asked me how did I feel about the way the Romulans were portrayed.
Because pretend I asked you that. Go for it.
First of all, what's with the whole the way their look was off, the mannerism was off, the way he talked was off. He just
Hi Chris, I'm Nero.
Yeah, his name Nero, really? I mean,
I have this fiddle here. Hang on a minute.
It's just it wasn't Star Trek to me, that part of it.
It stemmed from Nemesis, I think, which was a bad move.
Yes.
Because of that whole like Romulan mining subculture. Which
suddenly.
They just kind of threw into that TNG movie and kept it going, which didn't make any sense because he was like a biker Romulan almost. But they're supposed to be so stiff, like just like the Vulcans with their weird shoulder pad suits, but just with emotion. That was supposed to be their main deviation from Vulcan, was acknowledging the emotion or suppressing the emotion. And they just continued on with a thrown in villain, which now has basically appeared in two movies.
Yeah, so. And I have a hard time with vengeance as, like, the primary. I feel like, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's a good reason to be mad at people, but there has to be a better reason.
Well, especially since the vengeance factor in this movie was, like, I'm mad at the Federation because Spock didn't save my people from a supernova that he had nothing to do with. And it's like, there's a very weak connection there.
Yes.
It's like in Wrath of Khan, it's like, I'm mad at Kirk because he caused my wife's death. And it's like,
yeah, that's fair.
You could be, you know, and I could definitely understand being a little fed up with the revenge plot, but at least that's a strong vengeance plot.
Whereas sure. This,
I don't understand why you're mad at us. What did we do to you?
Yeah.
It's what you didn't do. It's what you didn't do.
That's awesome.
Did you guys, one thing I thought was funny, I wonder if you guys noticed it too, was the inside of the ship, it's like a mining ship. The inside of the ship looked a lot like a mine. Like it had this really deep chasm and there was like standing water everywhere, and I swear at one point I saw a rock face. And I felt like the set designers were like, all right, here's your mine. And they were like, wait, no, mining ship. And it was like, oh.
It didn't seem very efficient for space travel, but. I guess it's like way in the future. They don't care about that. But most ships that you see in Star Trek usually have some sort of sense to them, whereas I didn't think that ship had much sense to it. Like, it was just all mangled.
The sea urchin flying through space. Have you guys read the comic that is supposed to explain everything that doesn't make sense?
No.
There's a comic called Countdown, I think it is, that was published, and it's supposed to explain everything. And the reason why that the Narada looks like that is because it's covered in Borg technology. Because it was originally a ship that it actually looked a lot like the Bebop. If you've ever watched Cowboy Bebop, that fishing spaceship that they fly around in, it looks a lot like that. And then after Romulus is destroyed, they go to this Romulan like weapons development station, and they're like, "Hey, we're not sufficiently badass to be villains in a movie. Do you have anything that will make us more badass?" And the Romulans were like, well, we got this bucket of Borg nanites. We could toss this on your ship, and it'll probably make it cool. I don't know. And they were like, all right. And then they did. And so it grew all these, like, sea urchin-y arms.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the plot. That's the reason why their ship is so weird-looking.
Interesting.
You should read Countdown. I won't say it's good, but it will maybe give you, it will enlighten you a little bit as to what the writers thought was going on. You know, right. Not what they told us was going on, but what they think was going on in their own heads. All right. So
I don't know. They've said that about episode 3 too, but sorry.
Are we throwing in a Star Wars reference here?
I was throwing in a Star Wars reference there. Because everybody says that the book explains everything well.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm definitely not saying that the comic makes the movie better.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thought exercise to read the comic yes. and be like, oh, all right, I guess I see what you were going for. But it yeah. kind of highlights how much of a failure it was.
Yeah.
You shouldn't need a comic book or a book or anything else to help right. you understand a movie.
Yep.
Agreed.
I don't want homework. I want to go yeah. see a movie.
But the idea was, no, no, no.
That's why I hated the Stargate movie. I didn't want to read the movie.
I kind of like the Stargate movie.
Wait, which Stargate movie? The one that was
I like the very first one.
The movie, Stargate.
Okay. The one with James Spader. I kind of liked it.
Me too. It's one of my favorites, actually. That's why I didn't want to watch SG-1. I'm like, man, I want to watch it because it ruined, you know, possibility of sequels for this great movie and everything. And Andrew's like, no, watch it. And I'm like, yeah, but the characters aren't even the same actors. I'm not going to watch it. And then I watched it. I'm like, you're right. This show's awesome. The end.
Sorry, we diverged.
No, we do that all the time. Bringing it a little bit back on track, what are your guys' favorite ship? Or ships, you know, if you've got more than one.
I'm just an Enterprise girl.
But which Enterprise?
Ooh. E! Wasn't E destroyed pretty quickly?
Well, wait, no. No, the Enterprise E is the one that goes through each of the movies.
Oh, okay. So, E. I'll put E out there.
Mm-hmm. E. Sarah?
I have to say, weirdly enough, I kind of really dig the Defiant.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way it looks or its function?
Everything. I just think it's kind of an awesome ship.
There's a fun YouTube video that's basically just a piece of the DVD commentary floating around where it explains how they basically made the Defiant from a, you know, behind-the-scenes perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And how they were like, they were told they wanted a ship, but they were told they couldn't have a big ship because they didn't want Voyager to look bad. So they were like, it has to be a small ship. It's interesting. They had to jump through a lot of hoops to get the Defiant made. Jen, your favorite ship?
The Defiant is also my favorite ship.
Ooh, Defiant.
Yep, it sure is. I think one of my favorite scenes also in First Contact is that huge battle scene where Enterprise rescues Worf from the Defiant before it's destroyed. Anyway.
You know, if you line up the star dates, First Contact is actually happening during the episode of Deep Space Nine where Sisko has taken Eddington and they're off in the Badlands. So can you imagine if that's actually supposed to be what happened? Can you imagine Sisko getting back and being like, so what happened? And they're like, well, there was a Borg invasion. Sue, do you have a favorite ship?
I really like the concept, or I guess the original concept behind Voyager, mm-hmm. that it is a scientific research vessel. But and it's also kind of neat that it can land. But for full-out favorite ship, I would have to say Enterprise D.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I also love in All Good Things when you see it in the future and Riker has kept it from being decommissioned and added a third nacelle to it just because he loves that ship so much.
Yeah, yes.
I liked how in All Good Things the Enterprise, I think it's officially called the Galaxy X, but whatever. It understood three-dimensional tactics because it's like coming up from underneath.
Yeah! That's the Picard maneuver, you guys.
Oh, it's so awesome!
It's like probably one of the first times in like any Star Trek anything we've seen ships like take advantage of the third dimension. Except
for really any science fiction, because you really most science fiction battles look like
linear.
They look like Earth, you know, war battles between
the enemy's gate is down.
Anyway, very cool.
The only thing that bothers me about the Enterprise is the mauve interior.
Well, it was the 80s when they first
It was. It is. Ugh. It's horrible.
How did you guys feel about, speaking of the interior of the Enterprise, how did you guys feel about the transition from TOS, where everything was kind of Spartan, to TNG, where everything is very plush and, like, very luxurious, and they each have, like, you know, quarters the size of hotel rooms?
I think that's a result of being made in the 80s.
Yeah. Well, but it's also, didn't they have families on the ship? And that's something they talk about in Encounter at Farpoint, where they talk about, I think even it's a captain's log where he says that there's children on the ship now. It's completely about exploration. And not saying that the original series wasn't, but it's definitely a different idea that there's homes and there's schools and there's daycares. So it's going to feel more homey.
Yeah, but not only that, but they host a lot of diplomats. And yes, you'd think that you would want that ship to be more comfortable, inviting. I guess, inviting.
Did you guys?
And it's basically a city.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it seem strange at all that they put like children on a ship that was like routinely flying into like gas giants and extremely dangerous situations?
Yes.
A little, but I don't know. I accept it. I suspend my disbelief on that one.
Yeah.
Just let it be. And also, you know, it also helps create drama when you have families on a ship.
I always thought it was too bad that they didn't have that the saucer separation sequence was too expensive for them to use more often.
I know. I love it. That's one of the reasons I like those ships. I like the Enterprises because of the battle bridge and the saucer separation. Very exciting.
It ended up being the same problem I think Voyager had with landing the ship, was that there are a couple of times when it's like, man, we really want to land the ship, but we don't have the budget for it.
Yeah.
That's the thing that happens. All right. Hang on. I have more questions, I swear. All right. So I will throw this next one out. What would you guys like to see in a new potential Star Trek show?
Can I go first?
Yes, please.
Go first.
I would like to see some of the characters from the Below Deck type episodes, mm-hmm. like Ensign Gomez, and you know, have them in more senior roles. I know there's a series of Trek novels where some of those characters have, you know, been promoted and stuff. So yeah, I would like to see them in more prominent roles, and then some better, maybe, you know, at some point the writing became kind of sterile, I guess, or stagnant, I guess is a better word. So some new writers might be good. I hate to keep going back to Joss Whedon, but I would like to see him do just one Trek episode. I think it would be a good one.
Wouldn't all of us?
Yeah.
That's an okay thing to want, then.
And it would also be cool to see Dr. Crusher as a captain. You know, like a medical ship type show where you know, they're traveling from
Grey's Anatomy in space.
Yeah. No, I'm not talking about that aspect. But, you know, just the fact that I think everything became kind of localized and it was no longer about exploration on the Deep Space Nine series. And I think it would be nice to have more exploration or some missions that involve exploring other planets or visiting for the first time. Yeah, when I say exploring, I mean the audience being introduced to other aliens and situations and scenarios that maybe aren't always about war or fighting or, you know, I don't know if I'm making myself very
clear. That's fair. Sarah? I haven't heard from – oh, sorry. Go ahead, Angela.
No, it's okay. I was going to say that when I saw this question, it was kind of the hardest thing for me to think about. But I think that if they're going to do it, that it actually needs to be as separated as possible from just like TNG was separated from TOS, that I feel like they need to go like 150 or 100 years in the future and just start over, maybe make homage to the cast and the fact that, you know, there's a Picard maneuver or that this ship is called the Crusher, you know, it's a medical ship called the Crusher or something, but that it really is removed. And then you kind of have your new technologies and your new special effects and your new dynamic casts. And I feel like that's the only way that they're going to be able to jump out of that, because obviously they were able to do it once I don't know if they can do it again, but I feel like that would be the best way to get Star Trek back in the world. Mm-hmm. That's just me.
That's fair. Sarah, do you have an opinion on this?
I think that I would love to see in a Star Trek show way more diversity, because I feel like I'd like to break the two alien crew member thing. It's like there seems to be like a limit. I mean, some of them have more. Like, I think Voyager, I feel like, had more than most of the other shows. But I just feel like we rely too much on the human characters, and I'd love to see a Star Trek show where we have a majority are aliens, and we get to learn more about their cultures or what they're going through, how they're going through different things. I feel like you still need to have the relatability of humans, but I feel like they lean and take that more as a crutch, be like, oh, well, you won't relate to someone who's not a human, you know what I mean? And it's just like Star Trek is supposed to be about diversity, and I feel like Gene Roddenberry's vision kind of was diversity, and I feel like we're at a point now where I feel like they could totally do more aliens and have like a majority of alien cast. I think that'd be awesome.
I would love to see an Andorian captain. Yeah. Or a Vulcan captain could be fun too. If long is like, you know, if they could find a way to do it that wasn't like just if they could find a way to make them interesting.
Right. Ooh, Dr. Salar.
Oh my, I miss Dr. Salar.
That was awesome.
When you watch that episode and Dr. Salar is like, you know, very accurately describing the whole situation and explaining what's going on after Troy has given her, like, I don't really know what's going on. do you notice the way Troy is, like, staring daggers at her?
I've never noticed that.
I was watching, Troy has given her, like, a death look. And I was like, oh, no wonder we never saw her again. There's, like, an entire novel that focuses on Dr. Salar.
She's on the Titan now, right, in the novels?
Yeah, I think so.
On Riker's ship.
Yeah, is she married to some really weird alien? I think I remember reading that book. It's a long time ago, though.
This is possible. The Titan novels consist of a number of stories in which the Titan shows up, and then something really big explodes, then they leave. It's not usually their fault, but they just happen to be around when something really terrible is happening. Like, at one point, they show up, and then one of those two, like, little, like, mini-galaxies that we have orbiting the Milky Way, I think they're called the Magellanic Clouds or something, uh-huh. One of those explodes because the Titan was there. And it was like, you know, it wasn't really their fault. It was just them being there sort of sped up a process that was already happening, and then it exploded. It was like, it's like, okay. Riker, Destroyer of Worlds.
It's the beard.
Just a little bit. So there's been a... Continuing on the topic of another Star Trek show, how would you guys feel about it being set in the J.J. Abrams universe?
I'm not a fan of that idea.
Neither.
Nope.
Why are you not a fan of that idea?
Well, as I mentioned, I'm not a fan of any universe where there is no Vulcan. So that would be part of my problem with that. And then also, I mean, like I said, we have kind of a nostalgia for, we feel sort of a nostalgia for TNG, and I would prefer a universe in that setting.
Me too. Agreed.
I think it would be interesting if we had a show in that universe in the Next Generation era. So you saw how that parallel universe continued to diverge. But I wouldn't want to see a show with this crew, with the Kirk, Spock, Uhura crew,
right,
in that universe.
Fortunately, I don't think we have to worry about that because most of those actors are movie actors.
Well, right.
So hopefully, I don't think that's a thing. But there's been some rumors about like an animated show being made in the Abrams universe. I'm not even sure what to think of that.
That's interesting.
I don't know. If they make another show, it's kind of a dream of mine, and it might be veering a little bit too much towards Doctor Who, but I'd love to see them focus on the Department of Temporal Investigation. Because those guys were awesome when they showed up.
You're right, that was pretty cool.
I liked them, although I would be a little interested to know if they have time travel. I wasn't really sure if the Office of Temporal Investigations actually has time travel, or if they just document whenever someone else does it.
Didn't they show up to talk to Janeway?
They,
They did, So they do have time travel.
Well, I thought they also showed up in Enterprise, too, didn't they?
Yeah, but those are different people. The guys who show up to talk to Janeway are, like, time cops from the 29th century.
Those are the guys I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about the guys from that show up to talk to Sisko at the end of Troubles and Tribulations.
Ah, yes.
Because those guys were the official Department of Temporal Investigations.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the guys who actually have the time travel.
Time travel, yeah.
And go and yell at you.
Also, when Jen first started talking, it reminded me about Lower Decks. I think it would be interesting to do a series that was more like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, where it's more about the people and the supporting, you know, that all the interesting stuff is going on up on the upper decks, and that you have, you know, what is it like being in, you know, that might be kind of kind of interesting.
I like
to have
that idea.
A Star Trek show where we never see the bridge?
Yes. Yeah. No, that would be really interesting, because then that's the main focus, is the lives of the
ancillary characters.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I like that.
I would
like Lower Decks.
Except it wouldn't be a one-off episode. It would be the entire series.
Right.
I really liked that episode.
Yeah, I did too.
Good episode.
You know, that's the very last episode I ever saw of TNG. Like I had somehow I had missed it, and then I had been, you know, and then I was watching, and I had watched all the episodes numerous times, and then suddenly this episode randomly came on as a rerun, and I was like, what is this? Like, it's the episode I've never seen, and I was like, that's weird. So it kind of stuck with me, because it was like, I literally did not see it until like 5 years after it aired.
It was like, I had this moment of like perfect clarity, because I was watching it and I recognized the Bajoran, and I was like, where have I seen this Bajoran before? Like, she's familiar. I know I've seen her somewhere. And then she's called into Picard's office, and he's talking to her about this thing that happened at the Academy, and suddenly it all clicked. And I was like, oh, it's her! And, like, it was an epiphany, and suddenly everything about the episode made sense.
I have a weird question. Oh, go ahead.
They had just said that they were going to bring that character back on DS9. Like, she got recovered, and her mission was a success after all, and blah, blah, blah. And I was so looking forward to that when I read that in probably like Star Trek magazine or something. And then it never happened, and I was so sad.
That's my story.
And was Paris was one of the actors that was also, but was it Paris or was it a different character?
Okay, so
played by the same actor.
The character from the TNG episode, The First Duty, is not Tom Paris.
It, right.
It's a different guy. But he has exactly the same story as Tom Paris.
And he looks like him.
Yeah.
I think they just changed the name, right?
Yeah, basically. And the reason they gave, because they've been asked about this, and the reason that they gave was that Locarno, who is the guy that McNeil is playing in The First Duty, their explanation was that, Locarno was never redeemed, unquote. And I thought what they meant to say was, if we had used Locarno, we would have had to pay royalties. So we didn't.
Huh.
Because, I mean, I don't know. Like, Locarno,
to themselves?
No, to the writer who originated the character.
Oh, okay.
Because who exactly owns that character is somewhat questionable.
That's interesting. I thought Paramount owned everything.
Well, CBS owns the rights to the television show. Paramount owns the rights to make movies.
Right, right. Like,
some of the individual writers own specific characters. It's really complicated.
Interesting.
I couldn't tell you who actually owns the rights to Locarno, but that seemed to be the most likely explanation.
Interesting. That's the cool stuff about podcasts. You learn all kinds of interesting trivia.
There's all kinds of Voyager characters that are actually, like character from the Lower Decks, the Vulcan. Like, that guy is Vorik. From Voyager. It's the same actor, same race. Not the same character. And it's like, it could have been. Voyager is full of these people who are, I think, my new theory is that Voyager is a ship where a bunch of Starfleet people who were changing their names and trying to go into hiding went.
It's the witness protection ship.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think it was.
Because the actor, and now I feel, one of the actors that's a Vulcan is a thief in an episode of Star Trek, of TNG, right?
Yeah, Tuvok. Tim Russ, yeah.
He plays a complete, I don't think he's even a Vulcan.
He's a human.
I should have said that.
Wasn't the episode that Picard went undercover with
that's
that,
Gambit.
Okay, I thought it was Gambit that he was in.
No, this one was the one where the ship is being swept, and so everybody's off the ship, and then these four thieves go on, and Picard, like, went back to the ship to get his saddle or something like that, and he realized that thieves were there, and basically it's, like, him against these four thieves trying to take something from the engine. And it's all very exciting.
Yeah, this explosive, like, runoff that they have.
Yeah. It's cool. It's a good episode. It's very exciting.
Tim Russ is also the one of Sulu's bridge officers in Star Trek VI, and they actually made that canon in the episode Flashbacks.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Even though in the movie he's playing a human. I was fine with that. They glossed that
over. Yeah, whatever. Oh, okay.
But yeah, in Flashbacks they made it canon that Tuvok had served on the Excelsior, and that's one of my favorite Voyager episodes. They actually got George Takei to come back because you know, as the episode suggests, there are flashbacks.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. So I have just one more thing to ask all of you ladies, which is that we've been talking about all the Star Trek stuff we liked. I'd like to know, what about Star Trek you don't like? Jen, you made a noise. You have to answer first.
That's a good question. There's not a lot about Star Trek that I don't like.
Fair enough.
One of the things that sort of bothers me is the cat suits that the women wear. They're all boobacious and
just a little.
You know, there isn't. I don't think there are any women in Star Trek that I've seen that haven't been wearing skin tight or revealing clothes. Not that I have a problem with that. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I think they were a little more reasonable in DS9. Like Dax's uniform, I thought.
Yeah, that was better.
Right. Mm-hmm. Kira's got the catsuit going on, which kind of weirded me out, but like, but I thought Dax wore a reasonable uniform.
You know what weirded me out is when they did the whole mirror universe and Kira was
all evil
that.
People have
no, 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 no. Kira in mirror universe weirded me out. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No, the saddest thing about Seven of Nine is that there's one episode where she actually wears like a regular uniform. And she looks way better. Like, you know, looking at her, I'm like, that is actually more attractive than that weird cat suit they have her in.
Yeah, they did that to Beverly also, where she had to be in that weird turquoise dress for a while.
Mm-hmm.
No, and then, that's Troy.
Well, I'm sorry. Yes, I don't know why I can't speak tonight. Troy was in that weird turquoise dress. And then after an episode where I think Picard went on a special mission in that weird, that jerky captain became...
Jellicoe?
Yeah, Jellicoe.
People love Jellicoe, let me tell you.
Yeah.
He is so popular.
He commanded her to be... He commanded her to wear, be in uniform, and I think that was the best command given, but it really had a lot more to do with her body shape, right? Sue, you were talking about that in one of our episodes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, another crazy thing that I'd read that they thought, as tiny as she is, they thought that her stomach was too big.
What?
So they put her in all of those low-cut jumpsuits to draw attention to her chest instead of her stomach. And then in the later seasons, they put her in the normal uniform because they thought she'd lost enough weight.
Does not compute.
No, it's because they made her hair big enough that it took away that it was just purport. She didn't really lose weight. Her hair just got so big that she looked proportionally smaller. That's all it was.
And that just reminded me of something. That just reminded me of something else that I dislike. All the headaches that Troy had, and all the telepathic rape scenes, and
oh yeah,
and the actual rape scene where she gets like impregnated by an alien. That part is creeping me out.
Yeah,
that's the child.
Yeah,
I agree, but Jen really likes the episode, so don't hate.
Yeah, the episode's all right, but the way it gets started, I'm just like,
is weird.
I don't think you guys really fully thought that one through a little bit. Maybe could have given that script.
And also, do not get Jen and I started on Crusher romance either, because that is something that is a little weird to me.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about Sub Rosa?
Well, that's not the only one in which Crusher has weird moments of...
weird.
There's the episode where she like has sex with Riker while a Trill is controlling his brain.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then also Gates McFadden's like 8 months pregnant in that episode.
You're
gonna give her that love interest episode when she's super pregnant?
I didn't even notice. I must not be looking too hard.
If you go back and watch it, you'll notice that, like, all of the shots of her are from, you know, mid-drift up.
Yeah.
Almost the entire episode.
There are a couple episodes of Deep Space Nine where I started to notice every time Kira was in the frame, there was a table. And I was like, what's up with this table? And then in the next episode, she was pregnant. I was like, oh, okay.
But the only other Crusher romance episode I remember is wasn't really a romance, and it was the one with that guy who becomes like a being of energy at the end, Transfigurations.
That episode is really hard for me to remember. Like, I watched it and then I immediately forgot it, and then I watched it again, and I still can't keep exactly what happened in my mind.
She also had a relationship with a Trill. Yeah. That's the first Trill we ever meet.
That's the one where she was pregnant.
Yeah.
And so then sleeps with Riker.
Gotcha.
I thought that was weird. I was like, that's just... If I was Riker, I'd be a little creeped out.
It's too weird.
I don't think Riker's creeped out. I think he was into it.
Oh, Riker is a freaky guy. I think he probably...
He's a player. Whatever.
I mean, maybe, but it would have been nice to ask him. Would have been like, Riker, all right with me using your body like this? And he could have, if he said yes, then all right, go for it.
But, you don't think he volunteered with that in mind? If I carry this Trill...
Well, I suppose that's a point. Maybe this was a plan the whole time. Riker totally made fools of us all.
He's trying to hit on her in Encounter at Farpoint.
Is he?
The very first time they meet, she blows him off, but he won't leave.
It's been such a while since I've seen that episode.
Huh, I do not recall that at all.
I'm going to have to watch it again.
I'm going to have to watch it and see. That's weird.
I just saw that like episode like twice because we watched it on... I have the Blu-rays with like the remastered, and I don't even remember that. I'm going to have to watch it again, too.
So he doesn't like try and pick her up, but she's definitely blowing him off, or at least trying to.
Hmm. All right. Well, watch and see.
Angela, do you have anything about Star Trek that you don't like?
Except for New Uhura, not really. I mean, kind of just some of the stuff we've talked about before. And there's, for me, like, there's a couple of things where it's harder for me to suspend my disbelief. Like I've said, Time Zero is my favorite episode, except for the one thing I don't like about it is the whole premise for the episode is those silly energy beings swallowing the energy balls through their forehead is so ridiculous to me. And things like that where it's like you get this really awesome thing and then there's that one thing that just makes it dumb. and so it's like I think as the episodes got better and better, they were able to pull those things together. But yeah, and I feel like too that even though I hate to do this because we're a female podcast, we're not really a feminist podcast, so I hate talking like this because I don't want to sound like a crazy person, but I feel like some of the times the women could be treated a little better.
I don't think that's crazy at all. I think that is a pretty clear trend in most of the Star Trek shows that women kind of get a disservice.
Mm-hmm.
That's not.
But I think they're trying.
Sometimes. I don't think they were trying with Enterprise.
No.
We're put T'Pol in a cat suit and we're going to make Hoshi afraid of everything.
Yeah.
And let's put T'Pol in the shower room with everyone.
Well, and everyone in the shower room, and I have to climb through this thing, and all of my clothes are falling off, and I'm in my underwear by the time we get to the bottom of the Jeffries tube or whatever, and it's like, yeah. But, I mean, I understand, though, that that's...
Through Jeffries tubes? I mean, I don't know.
They just need to make the Jeffries tubes bigger, you obviously know people are going to be crawling through them. They're service entrances. I mean, come on. Anyway. But otherwise, though, as a whole, I don't have anything to complain about or much. But the things we do complain about is because it's fun too, because we love it so much. And we've had that conversation too, is that the reason we pick on it is because we feel like it's family. You can pick on your sister.
That's 99% of our show right here. If I didn't love Star Trek, I would definitely not continually point out its flaws. It just wouldn't be the effort.
Yep. Agreed. So that's pretty much it.
Fair enough. Sue, Sarah, you guys got anything?
I feel like I'm kind of, it's a hard, I feel like I'm ill-educated enough on Enterprise that I would say, you know, that's one thing I don't like about Star Trek. But the thing is I watched a couple episodes and I decided I didn't want to watch it because I thought it was just didn't fit for me and didn't grab me. But at the same time, I feel like I have been realizing, well, especially with people that I really, I trust their opinions, you know, Jen and Angela really like it. So it's like, I'm kind of like, you know what, maybe I should go back and watch that because I was younger when I watched those episodes and maybe I should. But I can say one thing I really didn't like about Star Trek is I didn't like the last couple of episodes of DS9. Like, I didn't like the whole weird founder war thing, the weird blue eye guy war thing. I don't even know the correct term for it because I didn't like that whole story arc, the war thing. I don't know. I'm just not like a big, I liked DS9 up until that point, but then it felt like it got really cumbersome and there's too much. And it was just like, I really missed like the intimate stories, and I felt like you weren't getting much character stories, and it was just all about that. So that's probably one thing I could say I disliked. But
fair enough. Sue?
The things that are coming to mind for me are actually really specific things. I really hated when the Borg showed up in Enterprise.
Yeah.
Like, yeah! Oh, yeah.
Remember,
I was like viscerally, oh, I don't
agree,
know.
Agree.
It was really bad.
When the Borg show up, send your admiral to investigate.
It made me so angry. And things like that, like nitpicky things that just don't make sense tend to get on me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to be honest, I was never really a big fan of Worf.
Whoa.
I'm not
a Klingon fan.
Explain.
I'll back you up because I'm not really a Klingon fan either, but go ahead. Sorry.
He's so one note, at least in the beginning, where it's all about honor and this and that and Klingon, and he was raised by Russian parents on Earth. And I don't know, maybe it just rubbed me the wrong way because I felt like he was trying to get away from what his actual family is to what he thinks it should have been.
Yeah, well, you know, in Soviet Russia, Klingon raises you.
That's true. He didn't really, at least I feel, he didn't really have any character development until much later in the series.
Mm-hmm.
And when I really got into Star Trek, I think it was after a lot of that story arc.
Mm-hmm.
So Worf, in a lot of the episodes I was watching, was at the afterthought. And I watched all the getting your honor back stuff later, and it was, you know, good story, decent television, but he just, it never clicked with me and Klingons.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
His Alexander story arc certainly isn't doing him any favors.
No.
Where he's just like, I have this responsibility, and I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
Like, that was probably my least, I didn't like that, because I was like, you know, I just don't think Worf is the kind of person who would shirk his responsibility like that. Doesn't seem
mm-hmm.
like that.
You know what else is weird? And if this tangent's too much, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. We're all about tangents.
People complain a lot about the Next Generation cast being too perfect. But if you actually look at all of the characters, they all come from really messed up backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Picard's father basically disowned him when he went into space. Mm-hmm. And I think Riker's mom died. And then his father was basically a no-show. And Geordi's mom was lost on a ship, and he's blind, for goodness sake. Crusher has no parents, was raised by her grandmother, and her husband died when she was, like, 28. You know, everybody...
Kasha has the worst.
Right.
And yeah. They're
all messed up in some way, and they have just reached the point where they've...
O'Brien has a good family life.
You can overcome that. What's that?
I said Miles O'Brien had a good family life.
Oh, yeah.
He's not a main cast member, so, you know, the point has been made. All right, so I have one last question before we wrap things up. If you guys, and I wrote this in the show notes, so I'm being all official about this, if you guys could design an alien race for Star Trek, what would you do? What kind of race would you make?
I'll take this one.
Go ahead, Sue.
Non-humanoid.
Yes, thank you.
I was going to go there, too. Go, go, go.
I mean, you saw a little bit of it in Enterprise with the Arboreals and whatever. I can't even remember what the race name was. Yeah, the Zindi. And they had the sea creatures. And I thought that was really neat, and I wish there was more of that in the other series, because not every culture is humanoid. I mean, we have that episode of TNG where they're, like, chasing the DNA trails that sort of explains why they're all humanoid, which is a neat episode. But still, there are other races out there, and I just think it would be neat to see more of that.
That episode only works if you don't know anything about biology, because it's like, even with that episode, we should still, like, we would still have more in common with, like, an oak tree than a Romulan.
Right.
So it's like, you know, that episode is a little weird, but it's a good episode up until that point.
Go ahead, Jen.
I was thinking a lot about this, and I kind of like the relationship between the Trill and their symbionts, but I would probably design a race that was not humanoid, and they have a symbiotic relationship with an intelligent virus that it doesn't just infect this non-humanoid, but it infects others to survive and to reproduce. And I was looking up on, you know, information on this to find out if there were any viruses that were like that. And there are, in fact, some that have symbiotic relationships with insects. So that would be interesting, I think. But
intriguing.
Well, just for easy makeup choices, I would like beings of energy that can mimic humanoids, and kind of a cross between something not as powerful as like a Q, but something a little more enlightened, like maybe a species that was at once earthbound or planet bound, but was able to evolve to an energy state. That's me. Also, I don't want to leave without pointing out that Guinan is one of my favorite characters. That's it.
Oh, no, Guinan's great. I love Guinan. Although Guinan, there are a number of scenes where I feel like you should replace Guinan with Troi, because Guinan is always counseling people.
But I still like her.
She's a bartender. That's her job. She's better at it than Troi.
There's even an episode where she even points that out, one where like Troi loses all of her powers, and they have this sequence where she's like, yeah, I could probably do your job. It's like, that's a little meta, TNG. That's just a little meta. Sarah, what's your alien race of choice?
I was thinking about it, and I have no idea. I feel like that question is too big for my tiny little mind to grasp at this time. I'm really good with coming up with stuff, but I have no idea. I feel like reading all the books and, you know, some of the books and, you know, watching the show, I just don't know that I could come up with anything that haven't already come up with, or that girls haven't already come up with really awesome ideas, so I have no idea.
Oh, aliens are complicated.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you all of you for coming on to the show, and again, you can find all four of these ladies at anomalypodcast.com. Please listen to their show, it is awesome. And
yay.
This is All Things Trek, signing off. As an addendum, Sarah realized after the show that her alien race of choice would be a robotic body with a biological entity inside, and that she's thinking of doing a graphic novel-style story about this sort of alien.